Hello and good evening. Certain events will resonate with us in our lives. Often you have those conversations, don't you? Do you remember where you were when Kennedy was shot? The fall of the Berlin Wall, the building of the Berlin Wall, 9/11, the Gulf War? Usually we remember the significant worldwide events that ripple across the globe, and it's not always good news. But one memorable day that certainly goes down in history is considered one of the most incredible and advanced events humankind has ever achieved.
I can only go back to before the moon landed, when I was at school. And there was a teacher there who turned around and said, one day, he said, they will land people on the moon. Well, you can imagine what children said. And, you know, it was all, that can never happen. You know, this is the Earth. No one's going to fly to the moon. But they did it. And it was a momentous occasion, in my opinion. It really was.
The year was 1969.
I'd just arrived in England, so it was exciting for me.
The Pontiac Firebird Trans Am, the epitome of the American muscle car, was introduced. It was the year the Beatles performed for the very last time.
It was a very exciting time to be in London in the 60s, 70s. In many ways, it was a difficult time. A difficult time in the Isle of Man, because I left them because there was no work, no opportunities.
More than 350,000 rock and roll fans flooded to Woodstock.
It was an amazing time, President Kennedy. There was a lot of optimism. Being a young person, there was a lot of enthusiasm for the science, technology of the future.
And the first man set foot on the moon.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
Neil Armstrong reporting their roll and pitch program, which puts Apollo 11 on a proper heading.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you... For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they too join with America in recognizing what an immense feat this is.
It was just mind-blowing at the time to imagine, you know, leaving the Earth. And that first photo, looking back at the Earth, the blue planet, was just incredible.
My eldest daughter was fast asleep in her bed. And all of a sudden, and I was nodding off, and suddenly I heard this clunk, clunk, clunk. That was him coming down the steps to actually put foot on the moon. It was precious. It was a step forward into the unknown.
I was on holiday with my parents in the Isle of Wight. We went to the Isle of Wight on holiday, and the family, there was about 10 of us, I think, went on this particular holiday, and we stayed in a farmhouse somewhere in the Isle of Wight. Can't even remember where it was now. But one of the things I insisted as a 15-year-old, as 15-year-olds can insist to their parents, make sure we've got a television. I want to watch the moon landing. And of course, we all got up late at night and watched it on this black and white TV in the lounge of this place in the Isle of Wight. And I remember it vividly, and to this day I'll never forget it.
A space race developed between the US and the then Soviet Union after the first Soviet Sputnik satellite. When John F. Kennedy became US president in 1961, many Americans believed they were losing the race for technological superiority to their Cold War enemy. It was in that year that the Soviet Union made the first ever manned spaceflight. The US was determined to get a manned mission there first, and in 1962, Kennedy made a now famous speech announcing, "We choose to go to the moon."
It was a period of enthusiastic can-do, anything, you know, anything. There was no boundaries. Landing on the moon was symbolic of that period, that time of changing culture and attitudes.
The space race continued, and in 1969, the Soviets successfully guided an unmanned craft to touch down on the moon. The US space agency, NASA, committed huge amounts of resources to what became known as the Apollo program. About 400,000 people worked on the program at a cost at the time of $25 billion.
All around the world right now, all around this world, people are gathering in front of television sets, and in some places, they're gathering in rather large numbers.
One of the best things I heard was by one of the Apollo astronauts who was interviewed only a few months ago, and they said when they did it, and everyone thought, yes, it was an American achievement, American money, taxpayers' dollars, and all the rest, but it wasn't. It was a human achievement.
And the man most well associated with astronomy here on the Isle of Man, certainly here at Manx Radio at least, is Howard Parkin of Astromanx.
And I think when we look back on in time now at the first steps of a man on the moon, yes, he was American, but it was a man who walked on the moon, and it was the achievement of humanity to do that. And I think that's great. That brings us all together. I think 600 million people, I think, was the number of people who watched the moon landing. Incredible numbers. And it did bring the world all together for that pivotal moment. I always try to find out lovely connections with the Isle of Man. And did you know, of the 12 men to walk on the moon, three of them have been to the Isle of Man. And where we're sitting now in the nunnery, it was visited by Neil Armstrong back in 1982, I think it was. He was a guest of Robert Sangster, who had the nunnery, of course. And then in 1985, to my absolute horror, I have to say, I was in the same marquee as Alan Shepard, the first American to go into space and the fifth man to walk on the moon. And he was here for Robert Sangster's birthday in 1985. I was working that night, opening up bottles of champagne all day. I was working for the brewery, and it was for his birthday. And I found out the next morning that Alan Shepard had been in the audience, and I didn't see him. And also, of course, Neil Armstrong came back in 2009, as a private visitor of John Taylor. Everyone knows him, Strix. He's very heavily into horology and inventions and that sort of stuff. And Neil Armstrong came here in 2009, and I've got the picture of him using him in one of my lectures, which John has very kindly given me permission to use. But Jim Irwin, the Apollo 15 lunar module pilot, like Buzz Aldrin was the lunar module pilot, he came to the Isle of Man four times in the early 80s. And in fact, if you go down to Ballacalawi, down in Colby there, there's a tree which was planted by Jim Irwin, and the plaque in front of the tree says, this tree was planted by Colonel Jim Irwin, USAF, US Air Force. He walked on the moon and in this garden. That's a lovely touch. And he came to the Earth Show. They had the Jerby Earth Show that year, and I believe you could meet him, and I didn't. I think I was on holiday or something. I didn't get a chance to meet him. And I have met a few others since then, but those three all came to the Isle of Man, and it's incredible to think a quarter of the people who've walked on the moon have walked on our island.
The main thing I can remember is excitement, following it on the telly. But the one thing that really sticks in my mind is my cousin, who was in the family business as well, who was very intense about things, and he followed it minute by minute. He even built himself at home a surface of a moon and a moon lander which he had on his dining room table.
Really bringing it to life at home.
Oh, yeah. And every morning when he came into work, I got the whole story about what was going on. So that's my main memory of it.
It's interesting because you don't necessarily think now of it as being so much part of people's lives, I suppose.
Yeah, no, but it was. I mean, it was so exciting. And when I think, I'm not really sure, but I get the impression that what you've got in your hand there, recordings, probably got more computer memory than the whole expedition, which is stunning.
Yeah. We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground.
Does it feel like it was 50 years ago?
Well, I suppose it must be because my eldest daughter is now, what am I? I'm 76. Yes, I was 26 at the time. Yes. Good grief, child. Good heavens above.
I'm sorry.
No. You forget. You really forget how things have changed and turned around.
Do you remember where you were the day that man landed on the moon?
I do, and I have a special reason for that because it was my birthday. I'd be giving my age away if I told you which birthday, but I was still at school, so we were allowed to stay up and watch it, but obviously it was quite bleary-eyed the next day at school and we were all talking about it, so because it was quite momentous in those days, and to be allowed to stay up was something wonderful.
What was that night like, staying up to watch it?
Oh, it was so exciting. It really was. It was just... It was unbelievable for the times that we lived in to think that there was somebody actually up there landing on the moon. So we just couldn't wait to watch it. And to actually see the photographs and hear, you know, not the photographs, the live screening, and the words of Neil Armstrong, it just sticks in your mind. So I've never forgotten that day.
That's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
I started flying with the OAC and my roster or whatever took me London, Detroit, was it the 19th of July? And when we arrived in Detroit, I turned on the television in the hotel room to see the men actually arriving on the moon. But the next night coming back to London, it was a clear night the whole way across the Atlantic. And I remember looking up at that full moon and the sky thinking somebody walked up there last night, and that bit has always sort of remained with me because it was so unusual 50 years ago to believe that they actually got there.
So sort of seeing it on the television had less of an impact than actually just looking at the moon yourself?
Well, I think it suddenly sunk in the next night that what I'd seen on the television the day before had actually happened to that sort of ball up there. Yes, yeah.
Well, I was obsessed. I think my wife and my mother beforehand would have said I was obsessed with the whole space age stuff.
Howard Parkin of Astromanx.
And I'll actually go back to 1961 because it started in 1961. I was a young boy. I was 7 years old playing football in the road, as we did those days. And my mum came outside. It was the 15th of April, 1961. And my mother came outside and said, "Boys, boys, come inside. I want you to see this very brave man." "Who's this? Who's this?" "He's just been into space." And I remember thinking, "He's been into space? Wow, how incredible is that?" And there was Yuri Gagarin walking through the streets of Red Square in Moscow. And that was the pivotal moment that got me interested in space and astronomy, and has done all my life. But fast forward now to 1969. The first great thing I did was in 1969 in January, when they announced the crew of Apollo 11. I wrote all three of them a letter, and I got back signed photographs from Mike Collins and Buzz Aldrin, just an autograph from Neil Armstrong, which I've still got, but the one from Buzz Aldrin has got written on it, "To Howard Parkin, best wishes, Buzz Aldrin, Apollo 11. That's my prized possession, as I'm sure you can imagine. And of course, we didn't know for certain that they would be the ones to go to the moon in July 1969. It may well have been Apollo 10, 11, 12, or even 13, may have been the first landing. It was all subject to how the various flights progressed. But of course, we all know what happened, and Neil Armstrong made history on that day, on the 21st of July, when he stepped foot on the moon.
What did it give us that we didn't know before? What did it give the world?
Well, apart from pushing the envelope, as they say, and faster, higher and stronger, the technology that grew out of the space era. I mean, let's be honest, if we hadn't had a space race, there probably would have been a war. I'm reckoning the Americans and the Russians, instead of fighting each other, they fought in space for dominance. And of course, the whole thing started with the Russians and the Sputnik and then Gagarin and so on. But the technological advances, and the Americans really proved that they were slower in the uptake. They were much slower getting into space and getting the first few major achievements, which the Russians seemed to dominate. But they put the technology, they put the ability to develop all this stuff. I mean, there's a whole list of things we can quote about which have developed as a result of the space industry. I mean, now we don't realize GPS satellites, battery-powered tools, phones. There's more computing power in your iPhone than there was on the lunar lander.
Okay, keep the chatter down in this room. T1, stand by T1.
You're listening to One Small Step, Manx Memories of Landing on the Moon. It's 50 years since Apollo 11 made that life-changing trip.
Stay off flight controllers. Retro, stay. Vital, stay. Guidance, stay. Control, stay. Telcom, stay.
I remember vividly coming forward now to about 1993, 1992, when I was teaching at the Isle of Man College in my lectures, and we just borrowed a sample of moon rock from NASA to put on display for the class in the college. It went round the aisle and everyone got to look at it. And as I drove down Homefield Road and turned left to go along Glen Crutchley Road, the moon was rising. And I'm thinking, I've just been looking at and touching a piece of rock that came from that. And this whole idea that we can do something this incredible, it doesn't have to be moon landings. It can be going to the top of Everest or the deepest ocean or some inhospitable place on the Earth. It's mankind's drive and desire to do things that are not comfortable. Look at the TT. Yes, we know it's dangerous, but there's an innate desire to do, to be faster, stronger, higher. And that's what the moon landings were about to me. It was just an amazing achievement.
As we look to the future of space exploration, returning to the moon has now become one of our most important goals. For this reason, in 2009, NASA sent two new spacecraft launched in tandem to the moon.
We're here at the Dome, and I suppose let's start with where we are, because it's so significant for our conversation today, because it is all about, well, the moon.
Exactly, and when you think about this place, this really is a sort of futuristic place. This is the place where you can immerse yourself literally in the scene above you, be it the moon, be it the stars, be it meditation or whatever this place is. Adrian always plays heck with me because he says I call it a planetarium, which fundamentally it is, but it's more than that. Its official title is a 360-degree immersive cinema. And of course, we all know that if you go to these big cinemas, the IMAX cinemas, where you get a huge screen in front of you, well, this goes to the next step. It gives you a domed theatre, so you look at one particular point, but the whole thing is taking place around you. It really is innovative, and it's great to be here, and it's so appropriate, as you say. We've just seen the beginning of the film called Return to the Moon, which of course is very topical at the moment, because Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, said they're going to go back to the moon, and hopefully by 2024, and there's a real feeling that that may well happen. The political will seems to be there, which it wasn't so many years ago, so let's hope it does.
When he returned from the moon, he was feted by kings and queens, presidents and prime ministers. He had the world at his feet, but instead of embracing his celebrity status, he retreated from public life. The man whose name is by far the most well associated with the moon landing, Neil Armstrong. The public knew little about this man. He did not enjoy giving interviews, but he did give some. So let's hear from one of those rare occurrences.
You're one of the very, very few people, I think, whose opinion on this is really worth having. In fact, there are only four of you. Do you think, from your knowledge of the moon, having been there, that it is going to be possible in the foreseeable future to set up scientific bases there on anything like a large scale?
Oh, I'm quite certain that we'll have such bases in our lifetime. Somewhat like the Antarctic stations and similar scientific outposts, continually manned. Although certainly there's the problem of the environment, the vacuum, and the high and low temperatures of day and night, still in all, in many ways, it's more hospitable than Antarctica might be. There are no storms, no snow, no high winds, no unpredictable weather phenomena that we're yet aware of, and the gravity is a very pleasant kind of place to work in, better than here on Earth, and I think it would be quite a pleasant place to do scientific work, and quite practical.
Mr. Armstrong, thank you very much, and again, let me say what a tremendous honor and privilege it's been to have you with us.
Thank you.
Houston, this is Tranquility. We're standing by for a go for a cabin depress. Over.
I spoke to three students, all heading to Houston, Texas, to study at NASA's Space School. I was keen to hear what they thought about the moon landing 50 years ago from that young person's perspective. So let's hear now from Alexander Brew from QE2, Harry Dunn from Ramsey Grammar School, and Hannah Midgel from St. Ninian's.
Well, there's like plenty of like modern films and media still coming out about it. I know there was a film about Neil Armstrong coming out recently. I watched that. That was great. And it's great how something that happened so long ago can still inspire people into going into this industry today.
Does it inspire you, that moment?
Yeah, starting from the speech that Kennedy made, it's not because it is easy, but because it is hard. That's like a great inspirational quote that, you know, you can base your life on.
What do you think about when you think of man landing on the moon?
I think it's incredible. And I hope when we land on Mars, it'll have the same kind of impact on young people and inspiring like a new generation of scientists. And
just find it absolutely mind-blowing how they did it with the technology at the time, because they basically went from, oh, we've got a few satellites up into space, let's go land on the moon with a man. I don't see how they managed to do it, but they did pull it off in the end.
I think it's through seeing documentaries and stuff, and you see the mission controls and these really old computers, and it's incredible that they managed to do that. I remember my mum talking about it because she was born on the day that man landed on the moon, and I'm actually leaving on her birthday to go to space school. But I'm pretty sure I remember her telling me about that and how like her mum would have been in the hospital giving birth to her. I think that's probably the first time I heard about it.
What did you think?
I thought it was incredible. And I was always interested in science as a kid, so yeah, that was really exciting.
Yeah, I would say when I heard about it, I thought it was amazing. Like, wow, look at what we can do. Like, when I was younger, submarines, for example, I still don't get how submarines work to this day. I still think that's amazing.
And that's a long, long time ago.
Yeah, really long. But yeah, I'd say it's really unique, kind of. You feel like we can do so much, why can't we do more? And it's kind of like, what are we going to do in the future to go even further? Because we've only had planes for, what, about 100 years or so? And we've landed on the moon 50 years ago. It's like, why haven't we done anything recently? There's not any big kind of things.
I can remember back in primary school, our head teacher was a big fan of like giving these inspirational speeches. And most of them were very, very good. And one of them was about the moon. And that really like put in perspective for me, like how huge of an achievement getting to the moon was for man.
I think it was just an exciting time, you know, that suddenly all these things were happening and we'd never really known or thought about it. I mean, politicians say things, but sometimes it can never happen. Now looking back on it, and I suppose the time around then, your trouble in the Middle Eastern wars, there was so much going on in a different way.
Did it stand out as something that you were always going to remember?
Yes, I suppose so. I think the flight back, because to have it clear the whole way back and you could look up there, you know, when it was quiet and think, crumb, somebody walked up there last night.
They entered the entry corridor at 25 minutes to 8 and they splashed down 15 minutes later. And those famous scenes of seeing the spacecraft coming down with the red and white, three red and white parachutes blossoming out as the spacecraft came down to the surface. And that was it. They had landed, they opened the door of the spacecraft, threw in three protective suits and shut it again. And this was all to protect the Earth, basically, from any potential lunar germs that may have existed. So using the negative pressure of the spacecraft so the air wouldn't flow out the spacecraft. They turned the pressure down. They threw in these spacesuits. The astronauts put them on. They were then winched up into the helicopter, where they were transferred to the Hornet, and they went into a mobile quarantine facility. President Nixon was there to see them. They went into quarantine for 14 days, actually. And famously, there's a lovely story that when they landed in the quarantine unit in Hawaii, Customs and Excise wanted to know if they had any goods to declare, and so they declared moon rock.
I remember as a child looking through my dad's homemade telescope up to the moon as he attempted to explain to me the intricacies of the surface I was looking at, and then noticing myself for the first time the uneven surface, which seemed to be littered with craters. I can't say for sure whether I truly grasped at that moment the realities of what putting a man on the moon really meant. But growing up after the event means it's what you've always known. It's not really until I researched this programme, listened to and watched the archive footage, and interviewed people with the real memories, living and breathing it at the time. It wasn't until then, I think, that I saw how much of an impact it had had on people. And not just Americans, but people as far away as China, Australia, Uruguay, South Africa, Hawaii, the Isle of Man. Looking up at the same moon where 50 years ago Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins travelled through space to that place a quarter of a million miles away.
This is Apollo Control at 102 hours into the flight of Apollo 11.
Thank you for listening to One Small Step, Manx Memories of Landing on the Moon.
It's grown quite quiet here at Mission Control. A few moments ago, Flight Director Gene Kranz requested that everyone sit down, get prepared for events that are coming. And he closed with the remark, good luck to all of you.
You can listen to this episode again as a podcast on manxradio.com. For now, though, have a very good evening.